I want you to imagine training for the most grueling physical and emotional event of your entire life.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Okay.
But every single day that you go in, you are assigned a completely different coach.
Yeah, someone who doesn't even know your name.
Exactly. They don't know your name, they don't know your history. And that is literally what giving birth in a modern hospital feels like for women who are suffering from a severe fear of childbirth.
It's a terrifying thought.
It really is. So, welcome to this deep dive. Today, our mission is to explore this like fascinating Swedish study. It's titled Navigating Fear of Birth: Women's Desire for Relational Midwifery Continuity of Care.
Which is a bit of a mouthful, but a really important study.
Definitely. We are going to examine how modern medical systems, sort of unintentionally create this deeply fragmented, anxiety-inducing experience, and how a shift back to relationship-based care could just fundamentally alter maternal health.
Yeah, completely change the landscape.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Because on the surface, we have a healthcare system that is perfectly designed for standardized efficiency.
Right, it's a machine.
Yeah, but it seems to be failing the very human beings it's actually meant to protect.
Well, the tension between that standardization and, actual human-centric care is the entire bedrock of this source material. To just set the baseline here, the research highlights a really stark reality.
Okay, what kind of reality?
Well, midwifery continuity models of care, which is basically where a woman sees the exact same midwife throughout her entire pregnancy and birth.
Right.
These models are heavily associated with positive health outcomes. And I mean, we aren't just talking about a vague sense of like comfort.
So it's measurable.
Oh, highly measurable.
Oh.
The data shows clear physical benefits and overwhelmingly positive childbirth experiences.
Wow.
Yet the study points out this glaring systemic contradiction. Despite like decades of evidence showing these continuous models actually work, they remain remarkably uncommon in Sweden.
Wait, really? Even with all that data?
Yeah, the standard practice there is still highly fragmented.
Which feels entirely counterintuitive, to be honest. I mean, if the medical community knows a specific care model produces better outcomes, why isn't it just, the gold standard?
It's a great question, and it really comes down to logistics versus human needs.
Yeah. But before we diagnose the actual flaws in the hospital system, I really want to understand the people at the center of this research.
Right, the participants.
Because the title focuses on fear of birth. And, we all get nervous before a major medical procedure. I know I do.
Sure, yeah.
So how is this different from just the standard everyday jitters?
Right. Well, the inclusion criteria the researchers used are kind of the key to understanding this. They were extremely specific about who they wanted to talk to.
Okay.
The subjects of this study were exclusively women who scored above a 70 on what is known as the fear of birth scale.
A 70.
Yeah, out of
Ibbotsis.
100. So this isn't just generalized anxiety. This is a profound, often debilitating dread that significantly impacts a woman's daily life during her pregnancy.
Wait, a numerical scale? I have to push back on that a little bit.
Oh, really? Why?
Well, how do researchers actually capture and quantify something as subjective and primal and emotional as a fear of birth?
It's a fair point.
Because if I'm terrified, telling me I'm a 72 out of 100, it just feels like reducing my very real dread to a math problem on a spreadsheet.
Yeah, I hear you.
And what happens to the woman who scores a 69? Is her fear just totally invalidated?
Yeah, it's a completely valid critique of purely quantitative research, and it's definitely a danger when we rely exclusively on those rigid cutoffs.
Right.
But what's fascinating here is how the researchers navigated that exact limitation, because they didn't just log the scores and call it a day.
Oh, they didn't?
No, they used that score of 70 merely as a doorway. It was a diagnostic threshold to locate the women experiencing the most acute levels of fear.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Right, so once they identified that highly vulnerable group, they abandoned the spreadsheets entirely and shifted to a qualitative research design.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, they knew they needed to understand the complex human emotions behind those numbers.
So the numerical score was really just the ticket to get into the study, but the actual research was focused on their lived realities.
Exactly.
But even with qualitative interviews, I mean, self-reported data on anxiety can be really tricky,
It
right?
can be, definitely.
Because if you only ask a woman how she feels after the baby is born, the sheer relief of just surviving the event might completely wash away the memory of how terrified she actually was.
Oh, absolutely. And the study's design actively accounts for that exact memory bias.
How did they do that?
Well, the researchers utilized semi-structured telephone interviews at two highly strategic points in time.
Okay.
First, they talked to them during the pregnancy itself when the fear was actively building, and then again in the postpartum period after the women had actually navigated the medical system.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, it allowed them to capture the raw anticipation and then literally compare it to the reality of the care they received.
That makes a lot of sense. But how do you turn dozens of hours of emotional phone calls into actual scientific data?
It's a massive undertaking.
I mean, if a researcher is just listening to stories, isn't there a huge risk that their own biases will shape the conclusions?
Well, that brings us to the methodology they used, which is called reflexive thematic
A
analysis.
reflexive thematic analysis.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and it is an incredibly rigorous process. It isn't just sitting back, listening, and taking notes.
Right.
Researchers will take, say, 50 hours of raw interview audio, and they meticulously comb through the transcripts line by line.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. And they code specific phrases. So, for example, if a woman says, "I felt completely lost when the shift changed," the researcher might tag that with a code like abandonment.
Oh, I see.
And they do this across all the interviews to see which emotional tags repeatedly surface.
Okay, but what about the reflexive part?
Right, so the reflexive part means the researchers are required to constantly document and challenge their own assumptions throughout the entire process.
Oh, so they're checking themselves.
Exactly. It ensures that the themes that emerge are genuinely rooted in the women's voices, not just the researchers' preconceived notions.
Wow. It is an incredible amount of work just to ensure the humanity of the patient is like kept intact in the data.
It really is.
So it's one thing to collect these deeply personal stories, but when the researchers laid all those coded transcripts out, what picture of the standard medical system actually emerged?
The picture was stark, to be honest. Through their analysis, the researchers distilled the women's experiences into two overarching themes.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first theme, which basically describes their experience of the standard Swedish medical system, was given this deeply evocative title by the researchers. They called it Unheld in the Hands of Many.
Wow, here's where it gets really interesting. Because unheld in the hands of many, I mean, that is such a poetic phrase, but it is devastating in its
It
implications.
really is heartbreaking.
It brings us right back to that analogy of having a different coach for every single training session. But like, let's take it a step further. Think about the last time you had to call a massive corporation's customer service line.
Oh, the worst.
Right. You get bounced between five different departments, and every single time someone new picks up, you have to completely re-explain your problem.
Yes, starting from scratch every time.
And your frustration just builds with every transfer. Now take that, multiply that anxiety by 1,000, strip away all your physical comforts, and put yourself in a hospital bed during one of the most vulnerable moments of your life.
That feeling of being bounced around is exactly what standard fragmented care feels like for these women.
It sounds like a nightmare.
It is. And when we look at the mechanics of why standard care fails these specific women, we have to look at how modern hospitals actually operate.
Right, the system itself.
Yeah, the system is built around standardized efficiency. It relies heavily on shift work, large departmental logistics, and, treating childbirth almost like an acute episodic medical event.
Instead of a human experience.
Exactly. Doctors and nurses rotate in and out based on the clock on the wall, not based on the patient's emotional state.
Right, it's an assembly line.
Precisely.
You can be surrounded by dozens of highly trained professionals, literally surrounded by many hands, but because there isn't one consistent set of hands holding yours, the structural integrity of your psychological safety is entirely compromised.
That's a perfect way to put it.
It's kind of like trying to build a bridge while the blueprints keep changing hands at every shift change. Every time there is a handoff, something vital gets lost in translation.
And the qualitative data in the study makes this painfully clear. The subjects explicitly describe this fragmented care as uncertain and highly stressful.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. Imagine a woman who has a profound, documented fear of birth. She has spent months working up the courage to explain her specific trauma and her boundaries to a prenatal doctor.
Right.
Then she goes into active labor, the hospital doors open, and a completely unfamiliar face in scrubs walks in. Instantly, she is forced to start from scratch. She has to wonder, did they read my chart? Do they know what I need? Will they respect my boundaries?
But surely the hospital staff are highly trained experts, right? I mean, even if they are new to the patient, aren't they following the exact same rigorous medical protocols?
They are, and that guarantees physical safety, which is, of course, paramount.
Right, they keep you alive.
Yes. But this study reveals that standard protocols do absolutely nothing for psychological safety.
Wow.
The sheer number of different professionals involved creates this chaotic, unpredictable environment. And for a woman scoring above a 70 on that fear of birth scale, uncertainty is the fuel for her terror.
It just makes it so much worse.
Exactly. The study emphasizes that this fragmented reality was a direct contributor to their emotional distress. The system itself, through its constant personnel changes, actively exacerbated their baseline fear.
That's terrible.
Instead of acting as a calming, stabilizing force, the structure of the hospital became an additional source of trauma.
That is a staggering realization. The very institution designed to help them deliver safely is structured in a way that actively triggers their deepest anxieties.
Yeah, it's a huge systemic failure.
So if this fragmented, rotating door approach is actively harming their emotional state, how did the researchers pivot toward a solution?
Well, they listened to the women.
Because complaining about a broken system is easy, but did the women actually articulate what they needed instead?
They articulated it with incredible clarity. And that brings us to the second major theme, identified through the reflexive thematic analysis.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because the fragmentation caused such distress, the researchers looked at the alternative the women craved. They titled the second theme, A Desire for Knowing and Being Known.
Knowing and being known, that hits right at the core of human connection.
It really does.
It implies mutual recognition. But what really stands out in the study's findings here is the sheer unanimity of this desire.
Yes, exactly.
The research notes that all the women interviewed, every single participant, expressed a deep interest in midwifery continuity of care.
It wasn't just a preference for some.
Right, it was a universal necessity for this highly fearful group.
And it is so rare to see such absolute consensus in qualitative data.
I bet.
To understand the power of this consensus,
yeah,
we really need to unpack the mechanics of what this continuity actually looks like in practice.
Right. What does it mean on the ground?
Well, according to the women's desires outlined in the study, this is not just about having a familiar face wave at you in the hallway.
Sure.
We're talking about a continuous, trusting relationship with a known midwife that securely bridges three highly critical phases: pregnancy, childbirth, and the postpartum period.
So the continuity covers the entirety of the psychological journey, not just the physical delivery.
Exactly. It's the whole arc.
But what is the actual mechanism at work here? Like, how does knowing the name of your midwife magically erase a clinical phobia of giving birth?
It isn't magic at all. It is the compounding nature of trust.
Trust. Okay.
The women in the study believe that relational continuity achieves three vital things.
Right.
First, it fosters profound trust.
Right.
And trust in a medical setting is not an on and off switch that flips just because someone is wearing a stethoscope.
Definitely not.
It is an asset built over time through repeated, consistent, and empathetic interactions.
Yeah, you have to earn it.
Precisely. Second, they believed it would provide reliable guidance. When the person coaching you through the most intense pain of labor is the exact same person who held your hand and validated your anxieties during your second trimester.
Wow, yeah.
Their guidance carries an entirely different, incredibly grounding weight.
Because they don't just know your medical history, they know your emotional tells.
Yes.
I just imagine a scenario where a woman is in active labor and starting to panic. In a fragmented system, she would have to somehow find the breath to verbally articulate her terror to a complete stranger.
Which is almost impossible.
Right. But with a known midwife, that midwife might just look at her eyes, recognize the specific breathing pattern they discussed months ago, and instantly know how to de-escalate the situation without a single word being spoken.
That unspoken communication is exactly what being known means in a clinical setting.
That's powerful.
And that brings us to the third and most crucial outcome the women identified. They believed this continuity would fundamentally reduce their fear.
Which raises an incredibly important question about modern medicine.
Okay, what's that?
When we look at this overwhelming desire for a known midwife, is it the advanced medical expertise of the midwife that is actually neutralizing the fear? Or is it simply the power of the human relationship itself? Like, is the being known part the fact that another human being truly sees you and promises not to abandon you actually acting as a medical intervention?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of the study's conclusions, the answer is definitively the latter.
Really?
Yes. The researchers' findings explicitly highlight that the relationship itself is the active ingredient.
That is amazing.
I mean, yes, the clinical competence of the midwife is the non-negotiable baseline requirement to keep the mother and baby physically alive.
Of course.
But for psychological survival, for the actual navigation and reduction of profound fear, the relationship itself is the medicine.
Wow.
The continuous presence of a trusted individual neutralizes the inherent uncertainty of the hospital environment.
That is just incredible to think about. In an era dominated by, you know, robotic surgery, artificial intelligence diagnostics, and hyper-advanced pharmaceuticals,
right,
this study suggests that the most effective, most potent intervention for severe emotional distress is simply a consistent, trusting human relationship.
It's beautifully simple.
It completely flips the script on what we consider advanced healthcare. You are trading the chaotic expertise of an assembly line for one dedicated, intimately knowledgeable partner.
And that transition from anonymous expertise to dedicated partnership is exactly what the data shows these women are crying out for.
Yeah.
The study's conclusion doesn't mince words. Women suffering from a severe fear of birth firmly believe that relational continuity fosters trust, provides essential guidance, and effectively reduces their fear.
It's what they need.
Conversely, they explicitly identify fragmented standard care as an active source of uncertainty and emotional distress.
So it's actively hurting them.
Exactly. The qualitative evidence presents a highly actionable path forward for maternal health care, specifically tailored to protect those facing acute anxiety.
So what does this all mean? If you are listening to this, what is the core insight you should really take away from this deep dive?
Yeah, what's the bottom line?
It boils down to a fundamental clash between system design and human psychology. Right now, women who are suffering from a debilitating fear of birth, those scoring over a 70 on the scale, are being forced to navigate a standard care system that is heavily fragmented and built on rotating shifts.
An assembly line.
Right. It is a system that inadvertently leaves them feeling unheld, passed along this unpredictable assembly line of well-meaning but completely disconnected professionals.
Yes.
And this fragmentation actively fuels their terror. But the solution, universally demanded by the participants in this qualitative study, is relational continuity.
The known midwife.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is the implementation of a single known midwife who walks with them across the entire span of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum recovery. That continuous human connection is what builds the architecture of trust.
Yes.
And that deeply rooted trust is what ultimately defeats the fear.
That perfectly encapsulates the findings. The evidence strongly supports shifting away from fragmentation for vulnerable patients.
It really does.
And as we conclude our analysis of the source material, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder.
Okay.
We have just examined how rigorous qualitative research clearly demonstrates that fragmented care causes very real emotional trauma.
Right.
And that patients fundamentally require knowing and being known to feel psychologically safe. If the data proving the medical value of human connection is this clear, why do our modern medical systems still default to an assembly line model?
That's the big question. And if we zoom out, where else in our broader healthcare systems, from elder care to chronic illness management, are we routinely sacrificing the profound, proven healing power of human relationships, all in the name of standardized efficiency?
It really makes you evaluate the systems we've accepted as normal. I mean, if you were about to face the most terrifying, monumental event of your life, wouldn't we want to look across the room and see a face that actually knew your name?